You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, your daily conversation for the Washington Wizards. Ben Standig here, talking to you guys on a Monday. What is it now, like 7 o'clock East Coast time? The sun is still out. It is still nice. I need to go out there and get me some of that. But before I do, before I get off the away from the desk and away from the laptop and breathe in fresh air, I'm going to introduce the latest podcast, which I recorded earlier today with ESPN NBA analyst Kevin Pelton. Really cool of Kevin to stop by. Thanks to him for that. Kevin and I talked on a lot of issues, but the primary topic, essentially, the Wizards heading into free agency. What do they do with Otto Porter? What is Marcin Gortat's trade value? Who are some of the free agents that the Wizards could realistically target and potentially get to this team? And, you know, overall, also just kind of what is the future of this team with a John Wall, Bradley Beal, and potentially Otto Porter trio? Where does that team go? Got into that and a whole bunch of other topics with Kevin. So I'm going to play that for you guys in just a quick second. At the end of that conversation, I'll talk to you guys for just a quick bit about the NBA the Wizards Summer League team going out to Las Vegas. Earlier today, I on Twitter broke the news that Daniel House, who of course was with the team last year for a bit in Summer League, but then also on the team during a chunk of the season, and former NBA player Jared Cunningham will be part of the Summer League roster. So I'll talk a little bit about that and a couple other nuggets that I've learned about the Summer League team, but I wanted to get going with the Kevin Pelton interview. But of course, just a quick reminder, you can download all of our podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher. Hopefully you guys are doing that. I really appreciate all of you who were sticking with us, even in the off season. Obviously, I know for a lot of people, the season ended in May against the Celtics, and adios until probably until the start of next season. But I know obviously a lot of other people, whether diehards or just into the Wizards, or hey, maybe you just like hearing my voice. I really hope that's not the case, because that would be frightening for some of you. But in any event, I really appreciate everybody sticking around. If you, of course, want to join in the conversation online, hit me up on Twitter at Ben Standig, or you can also talk to me at Locked On Wizards. And I should say also, I'm doing some work these days with FanRag Sports. I wrote a little bit today about the Daniel House and Cunningham signing and a couple other details. I also wrote the other day about some other wizardy stuff about Tim Frazier and so on. So you can check all that on FanRag Sports. Go over there, take a look at that. They've got other Wizards NBA content as well. All right, let's get into this. Kevin Pelton from ESPN. Enjoyed this conversation. Smart guy. He's not a hot taker by any stretch, but I respect that. I appreciate that. Sometimes I get mad at myself when I get a little too hot takey. Things get things get spiral out of control at spots. But I like having a rational conversation. I think that's what this one was, to try to get a sense of the Wizards situation heading into free agency, which begins now. All right, and joining the podcast as promised, one of my favorite NBA analysts on ESPN and really just around the league. And I'm not saying that's because he's here, but legitimately he's a level-headed guy. I appreciate that. He's good with the numbers, which I'm not always. And he is friends with Todd Dybas. That aside, he's still good in my book. Mr. Kevin Pelton, really appreciate your time, man. That'll be my only Todd joke of the day. If you have any other incriminating stories you'd like to throw in at any point, by all means, go for it.
Nothing comes to mind immediately, but maybe those memories will be sparked, and I appreciate you not holding that against me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Well, like I said, you're definitely one of the go-to guys for me when it comes to the NBA. I don't want to throw you into just the analytics category, but that's obviously a lot of where you how you look at the game. But you look at the game from all angles. You're the guy who does the trade grades for ESPN and so on and so on. So I'm going to do my best to sort of stay out of the injecting my thoughts into this. People have heard me talk about all these Wizards topics before. You're welcome to challenge me or ask me whatever you want, but want to get your take on a lot of different topics as the Wizards are, as the NBA is now just a few days away from free agency for the Wizards. Basically, when it comes, and we're going to ask you about, where you think this team is, their future is, moves they can make in free agency, but it really kind of starts with their own free agents, namely Otto Porter. And the real question is, with Otto Porter seemingly is, what is Otto Porter's actual value? There's all this talk, he may get a max contract. We can argue till we're all blue in the face whether he's worth potentially $100 million over 4 years, but that may be where things are going. But my question, I guess, to you is, just to start, what do you think he is worth, and what are your thoughts on Otto Porter after at this point in his career?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I have some statistical projections for what free agents are going to be worth. I only do the next 3 years because that's kind of as far out as realistically you can project using the similar players like I do. But, with someone like Porter who's in his prime or will be on this next contract, you can sort of extrapolate out from there. And, they show him, based on the expected cost of a winning free agency, being worth substantially more than the max for 0-6 players, being worth about $89 million over just the next 3 years that I'm projecting. Now, I mean, I think part of that is, as I'm sure you've gone over before on this show, Porter tends to fare extremely well in advanced stats, excellent RPM, ESPN's Real Plus Minus, does well in my wins above replacement player metric, which is box score based and is the other component of those projections. But I think the fair question is, how much is his efficiency and what he's able to do offensively boosted by the fact that he plays with such a dynamic backcourt in John Wall and Bradley Beal? And is, do those guys deserve statistically a little more of the credit that's going to Porter, given, how ineffective he's generally been when they have not been on the court? And I'm sure that, and that, I suppose, is the argument against him being worth the max, is that, really he's not someone, he's a situational player. He's a role player. You can't sign him and ask him to be your best player and create a lot of his own offense and have that work. Like, for example, what Dallas did last year with Harrison Barnes, to take that as an example. But I think the big thing that I come back to with Porter is, virtually every team in the league needs a role player like him who can be adequate, at least defensively, and a dangerous three-point shooter. Like, those are the kind of guys that teams in the league are trying to find. And especially if you have one as young as Porter is, I don't think you let them go even at the max.
And that's sort of the question with regard that a lot of people are having is, well, maybe he's worth X, but he's no way he's not worth $100 million, or the max contract will come in somewhere around that number. But the alternative is to what? They can't really do much about it. Either they're going to, if somebody signs him to an offer sheet and they match it, or they let him go. But then you're letting him go for nothing, a 23-year-old forward that you've invested 4 years in, who's improved every year, who just finished in the league fourth in three-point shooting, and here I am interjecting my own thoughts after I just said I would. But you'd let him go presumably for nothing in that scenario. All the different salary cap ramifications, I'm not going to pretend it off the top of my head always, but like, sign and trade doesn't really work unless he's willing to take less money, I think, and things like that. So do the Wizards almost even have no choice but to keep him, even if somebody goes out there and hands him an offer sheet? The Brooklyn Nets seem to be a team that people are thinking might do something like that. Do they even have a choice, to do anything but keep him based on sort of their situation? And like you said, he's actually a pretty good player.
I mean, First off, I always hesitate to say no choice, because I think that's when you tend to make bad decisions, when you say you have no choice. And, sure, you know, sign and trade could be a possibility for Porter, because even though it would mean the same contract for him as he would get for another team, you know, that team would then forego the risk of the Wizards matching the offer, which, you know, is a significant chilling effect in the market because of the fact that, you know, even with those offer sheets operating, they reduced the time that you have to match a little bit in the new CBA. Still, you know, that doesn't start until the end of the moratorium. And, you know, that means that the other options on the market could have dried up by the time you actually find out whether the Wizards match or not. So there is a significant incentive if you are, you know, Brooklyn and you really, really want Otto Porter at the max. I think there is incentive to, you know, whether it's draft picks or, you know, Jeremy Lin, to just throw a name off the top of my head, you know, now that they have D'Angelo Russell, like to make some sort of offer to the Wizards in terms of sign and trade. But yeah, I mean, again, you know, is that going to yield a replacement for Porter? Is that going to yield someone who's even, you know, 75% of his talent if you're having to use some sort of sign and trade with a team that presumably wants Porter because they don't have a guy like him? Or then, you know, the mid-level exception would be your other avenue. I mean, I guess you could create a trade exception and try to make a sign and trade of your own, but this is getting extraordinarily complex, and whoever you get, again, they're just not going to be as valuable as Otto Porter. But I mean, I guess the overriding question here is, you know, maxing out Porter doesn't really take away a lot of flexibility for the Wizards, given that they're, you know, already over the cap more or less. What it really does is dig into their pocketbooks over the next few years in terms of the luxury tax. So to me, the overriding question about the Wizards offseason is just how willing is Ted Leonsis to pay the tax, and how much tax is he willing to pay?
So the luxury tax is certainly a conversation, something that's coming up more and more in the sense of the Wizards. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think a lot of teams have been going into the tax, but maybe I'm getting the sense of to be more teams that are going to this year. What's your, I don't even know if you know how to ballpark guess this, but what's your guess? Like, how many teams would actually be potentially doing this year? You know, so if the Wizards get in there, they're not, you know, it's sort of keeping up with the Joneses on some level.
Yeah. I mean, so the last couple of years, basically the scenario you've had is that, you know, the cap has been going up. It's gotten a lot of teams out of luxury tax trouble. And it's basically only been, you know, I think Golden State paid it 2 years ago, not this past year when they won the championship. The Clippers have paid it. The Cavs have paid it. But it's really only those top handful of teams. And what's going to change this year, because of the fact that so many teams like Washington used cap space and then re-signed their own players going over the cap last summer. And now, because of the fact that the cap didn't go up as much as expected, and you've got this second group of players like Otto Porter who are going to make a lot more money, you know, their situation is somewhat similar to Portland, for example, another team that did that same thing, went out and signed Evan Turner last year, re-signed a lot of their own guys to go over the cap, and then now they have CJ McCollum going to a near max extension that he already agreed to last summer. So they're in an even much worse position where, you know, Portland right now is, I believe, $19 million over the tax line, the projected tax line in the most likely scenario. So there are a handful of teams like that, and we'll see how many of them end up able to avoid the tax. But my guess would be, you know, we probably have 5 or 6 tax paying teams this year, which would be a dramatic departure from the last couple of years.
All right. So I guess I'll put you on the spot here. You're in the Ernie Grunfeld position. How do you play this Otto Porter situation from, you know, do you make the move aggressively to go and get him done quick? Do you wait for some other team to see if they're going to max? And then ultimately, if somebody does offer him, do you match? What if you're in charge, what are you doing?
I would definitely be negotiating with him ahead of time. The situation we've seen a few times in recent years is that restricted free agents have preferred to just avoid the uncertainty of that market and the possibility that no one is coming with a max offer sheet because of the fact that they're scared of it getting matched, and they're willing to sign smaller deals. So Evan Fournier last year in Orlando would be a good example of this. Chris Middleton 2 years ago in Milwaukee signed what now looks like an extreme bargain deal for the Bucks, although that may have been related to the fact that his agent was basically running the team as the GM at that point through Jason Kidd. So, you know, the Wizards don't necessarily necessarily have that advantage, but you know, this is life-changing money for guys who have not made very much to this point in their career. Porter's made a little bit more than those guys have as, you know, the number three pick, whereas Middleton was a second rounder and Fournier was a late first rounder. But still, this is, you know, a huge increase for him. And if he's willing to lock that in at, you know, something starting, you know, maybe at like $22 million a year instead of the max, then absolutely I would go ahead and do that if I were the Wizards. I think that's, you know, totally – those couple million, especially as a tax-paying team, are totally worth it, even, you know, giving up the chance that maybe, you know, the market would end up much lower than you expected and you might get a better bargain.
Is any part of you say, well, you know what? If we let Otto go or do, you know, we don't bring him back, whatever, in whatever form that means, but we still have Bojan Bogdanović. He's another restricted free agent. We had him here. We know he can shoot. Maybe we keep him instead, let Otto Porter go. We get him. He'll cost some money, but it'll be a lot less money. Does any part of you think maybe that's a viable strategy? And if not, do you see Bogdanović returning in any other capacity?
I would say I don't personally see that as a viable strategy given the defensive downgrade from Porter to Bogdanović. I mean, we saw that last year. It kind of played out as I expected, where he was great offensively, benefiting like Porter has from that shot creation around him, very different than when he was in Brooklyn, but, you know, gave up a lot of that at the defensive end of the court. So do I see Bogdanović returning in a reserve role? I mean, I think it's possible. Again, it gets back to that. How much tax is Leonsis willing to pay? You know, if he's willing to go deep into it, certainly Bogdanović is, you know, they gave up a first round pick for him, although a large part of that was getting off Andrew Nicholson's long-term money. They clearly liked him at that point and liked him in that reserve role. So I don't think it's inconceivable to me, but, you know, if you are looking to save money, Bogdanović and replacing him with a cheaper option to me is the place to do it rather than Otto Porter.
Are the Wizards, just to sort of tie up this Otto Porter thing on some level, you know, we're watching this Paul George situation play out in Indiana where he's told them flat out, look, after this year, one way or the other, I'm going to get out. The Wizards, they have 2 years left, I believe, on John Wall's contract. So if they don't do anything now with him with an extension, and he is eligible now for this max extension after being named to an All-NBA team, but if nothing happens, they would potentially be in the same situation next summer the way Indiana is now. Do they kind of on some level have to keep Otto Porter with John Wall in mind? Because if you were to let him go, right, it becomes a lot harder to fill that to fill that spot that he just vacated. And now you have John Wall going, hey, wait a minute, I'm trying to win here. Why are you guys potentially going backwards? Do you think that that sort of potentially ties in to what they have to do with Otto?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, the star players want to win right now in the league. That's, you know, generally been the overwhelming driver of where guys have gone, even ahead of market. Although, you know, Paul George may be the exception to that in terms of going home to play in LA if he indeed does that. But and then also there's just kind of the signaling effect of it. Like, is this team committed to doing whatever it takes to win? And I think that's probably going to be very important for Wall. You know, this is an even smaller example, but you think of, you know, what role did the Heat using the amnesty provision on Mike Miller to save some tax payments end up playing in LeBron James deciding to go back to Cleveland when he did? So, you know, I don't know if that actually made the difference, but it did seem to be a factor in his thinking. And you just basically don't want to give John Wall any reason to leave if you don't have to.
Yeah, no, I think that's sort of the big matzo ball hanging out here. We're all focusing on the here and now, which obviously you kind of have to, but that John Wall situation, I would be very curious to see if they don't get a deal with him done sooner than later here, I guess. What does that potentially signal for him and for the team going forward? But for the moment, we'll stay optimistic for the Wizards, and we'll stick with the here and now. So there's no point discussing Trey Burke, their other restricted free agent, because I would be stunned beyond belief if Trey Burke plays for the Wizards, let alone maybe any NBA team at this point. I don't know. He was not good. He was not good this past year. When I kept trying to find a replacement for him, you know, sometime around the trading deadline, I heard you. I want to say it was on. I think you were doing the podcast with.
Dunk Don mock trade deadline.
Yeah. And you had the idea of the Wizards acquiring Jennings, to which I was like, you know what? I don't love Brandon Jennings, but, and I'm not saying you did either, but may seem to be a guy who was on the cheap. It made sense. I sort of latched onto that, talked about that. Obviously, he ended up coming on as a free agent, and it drove Todd crazy, just the amount of time that Jennings was involved out there on the court. It was almost worth watching all those terrible John Wall, Brandon Jennings pairings to see Todd suffer. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, that definitely did not work out well as I anticipated. And boy, it was one thing for them to sign him for the minimum after he got bought out by the Knicks. If they had actually been paying him his full salary and had given up a second-round pick for the privilege, it would have been even worse. So, I'm going to take a mulligan on that idea. I will note, though, that
he was better than Trey Burke. I mean, whatever he wasn't, he was better than what they had. That doesn't a low bar, but that, he was an upgrade.
I will note, though, that I was revisiting a piece I wrote before the deadline about potential kind of buy low targets. And one of the players who was on that list was Tim Frazier, for, I think, the very reasons he ended up getting traded. And I mentioned Washington as one of the teams that could be in the market for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you were very positive on that trade. Definitely go read Kevin's analysis on ESPN.com. Of course, follow Kevin Pelton on Twitter at KPelton. I'm sure you already do that, though, so I'm just wasting time mentioning that. But go do it if you're not. He doesn't put a lot of nonsense on his Twitter feed like yours truly.
I don't know. I did live tweet the BET celebrity game on Saturday, so.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's fine. It's the summer. There's a lot happening per se, but in between the draft and free agency, it's kind of quiet right now. You're fine. At least you're on topic. Like I'm veering off into all kinds of sports and nonsense. You're at least on topic, sort of. All right. Let's get to the other sort of thing that I kind of wondering about with the Wizards this offseason, and that is because they don't have a ton of cap space, right? I mean, basically have mid-level exception, and maybe they can do a couple other smaller things, but they don't really have a lot of opportunity to do anything. But the one thing I think that's sort of the big wild card to me is the potential idea of trading Marcin Gortat, maybe Jan Mahimi, but more likely it would be Gortat just based on he's got a smaller contract left. He is a little bit older, but he is the more durable of the two. And, look, he led the league in screen assists, all that. From what I heard right at the end of the season, it sounded to me like Gortat was going to be traded. But, we'll see. The world may have changed a little bit over the last few weeks. All that said, what I can't sort of figure out is what is Gortat's actual trade value? I mean, like I said, there are some positives to look at. He gets double-digit rebounds. He's always there. That being available is a huge asset. But at the same point, there's not a ton of offense outside of those pick and rolls with Wall. He is getting up there. He's 34. And this game is evolving away from the type of player he and Jan Mahimi are. So I guess my question for you is, if Gortat is available in the trade market, what do you see his actual value being?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty skeptical. And not necessarily because of anything, with Gortat in terms of the evolution, but just because of the fact that, at some point there became more seven-footers who are capable of being effective than there are kind of teams that need them at this point. So, you've seen this already in the market for centers. Greg Monroe, who was incredibly productive last year in a reserve role for Milwaukee, deciding to pick up his player option for next season at, 17.9 million instead of going out into free agency. Brook Lopez gets traded to the Lakers in a deal that really was more about the Nets agreeing to take on Timo Mozgov's salary than it was about the fact that the Lakers got Brook Lopez. Dwight Howard getting traded last week for, to call it a poo-poo platter would probably be too kind. It's a very expensive poo-poo platter of, Miles Plumlee with 3 years and $37.5 million left on his contract and Marco Bellinelli with $6 million left on his contract. So, obviously there are individual factors with each of these things. Dwight Howard's salary and his attitude in the locker room, his desire to be a star, I think all that limited his trade market. But there's just not that many teams out there looking for centers. And then those trades that did happen, now all of a sudden, Charlotte is off the board. Atlanta probably is not looking to trade for a center because, they're probably going to, either go into free agency or just rebuild if they let Paul Millsap go. So it's hard for me to see a situation where the Wizards would get enough value back for Gortat to make that work for them.
So if they end up having to keep Gortat, you have Gortat, you have Mahimi. I personally didn't understand, I don't think a lot of people kind of did, why they went out and signed Mahimi. Forget the terms per se, although I guess you really can't. But when you have Gortat and the game is going to, like I said, evolving the way it is, I think one reason Boston beat them in the series was that Al Horford really kicked their butt from outside, because, you know, he's the Wizards have these centers having to chase him out in the perimeter, and you know, that was a problem. And if they took Gortat, or if you keep Gortat or Mahimi off the court, that's like $28 million of players that you don't have, and then the Wizards bench is more exposed, and yada yada yada. But if you bring Gortat back, if you can't do anything with it, what does that sort of do for the Wizards going forward, when you have, again, these two centers who can't play together? Scott Brooks said that on the record, they can't play together. How does that work? Or are they just sort of stuck, possibly, having these two guys in a situation where the game is moving away from them?
Yeah, I mean, I think they might be, unless they're really just willing to, you know, maybe move Gortat for cap relief or tax relief in this case, which, again, goes back to that question about how much Leonsis is willing to pay, because that's, you know, it's still good to have both Gortat and Mahinmi, especially with Mahinmi's, you know, knee injuries last year and, you know, the uncertainty about his status. I mean, I think the logic when they signed him was, you know, we know Gortat is going to be declining given his age. So eventually, you know, as Mahinmi is still in his prime, he sort of, you know, supplants Gortat and, you know, maybe makes him expendable in a trade, but maybe just moves him to the bench. And now, because of the fact that his first season was so marred by injuries, it no longer looks clear like that's going to happen before the end of Gortat's contract.
Sort of to veer off for a quick second here, you being the stats analytics guy, the Wizards, I'm curious what you think of this. You know, Mahinmi, obviously, it was mostly of a disaster of a season. He misses the first 50 of 51 games with that injury, and then he comes back, but then he gets hurt again. And basically in the playoffs, he wasn't 100% even close when he was in there for Boston, and you could tell how things, you know, really weren't working for him. But if you go back to when the Wizards had him on the court, the bench was an utter disaster for most of the season, without question. But there was a 25-game stretch when Mahinmi was playing real minutes after the trading deadline when he came back. Of course, you also had Bogdanovich and Brandon Jennings, so the bench as a whole upgraded. But they went from being one of the worst teams in terms of one of the worst bench units with a net rating to about 10th in net rating in that 25-game sample size. Does that tell us anything? I'm sort of putting you on the spot with that. But does that give the Wizards fans any kind of hope to say, look, even if they keep Gortat and Mahinmi, the bench was actually a lot better when that guy played? That's something to maybe view as almost like getting this guy for this year after basically not having him last year.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, going beyond that, there's a track record of Mahinmi being a very good defensive center for a long period of time in this league. He was part of, you know, some bench units that were nearly as good defensively in Indiana as the starting units were with Roy Hibbert when Hibbert was winning Defensive Player of the Year. So, you know, he is an excellent defender if he's healthy. He moves well for a center. He does, I think, fit defensively well into the modern NBA. You know, the bigger question with Mahinmi to me is whether, you know, he basically has 1 year offensively where he was capable enough to play a large number of minutes, that being, you know, his contract year before he signed with the Wizards. Can he get back to that point? I'm probably more skeptical there than of how he can do defensively as long as he's healthy.
All right, so let's get into some of the actual free agents. There's sort of two questions on the table. And one is, what do you, now that they've got Tim Frazier, presumably their backup point guard situation is settled one way or the other with Frazier and Satoransky backing up Wall. Presumably they're not going to add somebody else. So I guess my questions to you are, one, what do you see as the Wizards' biggest need in free agency? Again, they have that mid-level exception, I believe, so that may be the one thing they could put some money towards. And then I guess secondly, who do you see as a specific player or two that when you look at the Wizards, when you look at the realistic dollars that they might command, the situation, et cetera, a couple guys that you think actually the Wizards should be considering in free agency?
You know, so to me, I would say that it's, you know, kind of a question of, either you re-sign Bogdanovich or you use the taxpayer mid-level exception. I'd be really surprised if they did both of those things. And so what that means is you're probably looking at that taxpayer mid-level as a way to get a cheaper replacement for Bogdanovich, assuming, you know, his market goes significantly north of the 7 million cap hold that he's got currently on the books. So, you know, the number one name that I think of as someone who could potentially fill that role would be Omri Caspi, who had a tough year last year because of injuries, was injured in Sacramento right up to the trade deadline, then was dealt in that DeMarcus Cousins trade and came back, played one game and broke his hand, and the Pelicans waived him because they didn't think they could afford to waste that roster spot. And then he finished the season up in Minnesota. But, someone who's kind of similar in terms of can slide down to the four, in smaller lineups playing alongside Porter, but also can be a backup three for the Wizards. I think better defensively than Bogdanovich, not quite the shooter, but still a good shooter. And I think he's definitely someone you could get for, less maybe even than that, that taxpayer mid-level exception. I mean, the other guys in that range are maybe a little more fours than threes as I look at it. You've got, maybe Luke Babbitt, Jonas Jerebko. He's almost exclusively probably a four at this stage of his career. Maybe Shabazz Muhammad could be someone. He's not really the shooter that you're looking for in that position, but is someone who can create offense as part of that second unit. He could be a consideration. Tyreke Evans, we'll see where his market falls. He's more in the 2-3 range than the 3-4 range, but another one who could be an offensive creator in that second unit, although he didn't necessarily play particularly well alongside Tim Frazier last year in New Orleans. Kyle Korver is probably outside that price range, but maybe he's an option if his market isn't there. Those are the guys that I would probably be looking at. There's maybe also, if they really view the need to get more of a defensive stopper in that perimeter role and aren't valuing Shooty as much. I mean, I don't think that fits as well with the second unit, but maybe it fits better when you're playing that guy with the starters if you don't. But Kelly Oubre probably is that guy. So I don't know. Thabo Sefolosha is someone who could be that, or Luke Richard and Mbamute. Those would be a couple other names.
So the one name that I keep in my head banding about, and maybe I'm way off in terms of the reality with the salary, but there's this notion, at least in these parts, that players come to the Wizards, they play with John Wall. John Wall gets them the ball. He sets them up for shots. They get paid. There's some method to this madness. Jared Dudley has said he was on this podcast and said that happened to him. Other guys have, you can see over the years, Martell Webster and others. And so I'm wondering if there's some guys who may be willing to take a little bit less to play with John Wall to rehabilitate their value in the market. And one guy that I keep looking at is Jody Meeks. I mean, he's a guy who can't stay healthy the last couple of years, but he shoots 40% from three. The Wizards could really use that type of pop off the bench if Bogdanovich goes. Is he going to make too much, or is that somebody that's maybe would make sense?
No, I think that's completely reasonable. I'd be surprised if he made much more than that at this point because of the injuries you mentioned. It was a little surprising that the Pistons got a taker in Orlando to just take that last year of his deal, which was, I think, a little bit more than the taxpayer mid-level. And then, he played well when he was out there. So, yeah, that's a good call.
Orlando, that team is so confounding. It almost seemed perfect to me, like this year, that they ended up with the sixth pick. I mean, who knows? Maybe Jonathan Isaacs becomes great, but it felt like it was like a five-player draft, which seems perfect that Orlando, they always seem to be just on the outside or doing the wrong thing. Or I thought for years they were going to be a team that was going to be on the come in the Southeast Division, and man, they've just gone backwards. I don't know what they're doing. They are baffling.
Yeah, they are. They're very difficult to read, but we'll see what the new regime down there going maybe in a little bit different direction.
All right. So we just talked a little bit about free agency. Let me just veer it back to the Wizards big picture with two questions. One, Scott Brooks, by all accounts, very good year. Obviously, the Wizards go to 49 wins, most they've had in 40 years. Got to give a lot of credit to the head coach and just being around the team all year, you could sense a different vibe with them. Scott Brooks was always upbeat. He didn't focus on the moment. He focused on the big picture, and I think the team sort of played like that. They didn't seem to be, worn down by focusing on having to win that play, that quarter, that half, that game. And Brooks, seemed to have really, really good effect on on John Wall, if they play more up tempo, so on and so on. The playoffs, look, they were one game away from the Eastern Conference final, so it's not like I can, you know, there's much room for criticism. And he was going up against Brad Stevens in the semifinal round, and he's obviously, I think, a Jedi. I think that's more or less proven at this point. But it seemed like I started to see a little more of the concerns when people would talk about the Brooks and OKC, about the offense. Offensive flow wasn't always there. The substitution patterns were a little bit odd. Again, I mentioned the Wall and Jennings thing that happened a lot. People criticized him in that Game 7 against Boston for playing the starters too many minutes, and perhaps that led to them wearing down late. Your take on Scott Brooks, from your perspective, how he fit in with the Wizards, and kind of where you think this team can kind of go with him as coach?
Yeah, I agree with everything you say about the regular season, certainly, and how effective he was. I mean, I think, you know, in the playoffs, in particular, often coaches look as good as their options are. So, you know, for that Game 7 criticism in particular, yeah, I mean, I think if I recall correctly, the bench did give them some good minutes in the first half of that game before they are.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like one moment where it was like, wow, maybe the bench is not going to be completely outplayed, is what I have in my head. But, you know, I think you could just as easily see the other criticism where, okay, you know, it's Wall and Beal are on the bench and the game is getting away from the Wizards. The Celtics are pulling away. And then everybody's like, well, why aren't the starters out there? You know, it's sort of similar to what Ty Lue, I think, faced in this year's NBA Finals. Something similar where, you know, he was kind of damned if he did, damned if he didn't, because either Golden State was going to expand the lead while LeBron was resting, or LeBron was going to wear down at the end of the game. Like, okay, I don't know which is the better option between those two. Some of the particular lineups and, you know, maybe the difficulty finding a good way to, you know, integrate the starters and the bench as opposed to just having, you know, the bench out there on its own. I mean, he did play Beal and Wall with those groups, but never found a satisfactory solution. And maybe there was not one out there to be found. But yeah, that is where maybe you'd like a little more creativity.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, it's really hard to knock pretty much anything that Brooks did ultimately. I mean, I think it was a very good move. Whenever people want to criticize whatever Ernie Grunfeld has or hasn't done, that always seems to get lost in the notion that presumably he more or less hired that coach, and that coach was an upgrade over what they had. No disrespect to Randy Whitman, but from where I'm sitting, it seemed like it was an upgrade. But yeah, I'll be curious to see see what happens in year two. Some of those lineup situations, myself and others may get more vocal about it if we see some of those odd combinations again. But like I said, for the most part, hard to argue with any of it.
And I would say, to jump in here, the one thing that really impressed me is I didn't feel like he was as stubbornly loyal to his top lineups as he was in Oklahoma City. I mean, that was, you know, the big thing that lost me with the Thunder, the 2012 NBA Finals, where it was obvious that starting lineup with Kendrick Perkins couldn't stay out on the court against the Heat's pace and space lineups, and he just stuck with it to the bitter end because of the fact that he was so loyal to Kendrick Perkins. And I think we saw in Washington more willingness to mix things up a little bit as opposed to sticking with the default.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. We haven't really talked about John Wall and Bradley Beal too much, but obviously when you talk about the Wizards in general, that's where the conversation begins in terms of what this team can do. And, outside of Golden State, maybe we're talking about the next best backcourt in the NBA. I'm sure guys in Portland would tell me to bug off. But, you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal, very good. John Wall, four-time All-Star, but last year I think was his best season overall. Bradley Beal, no question, it was his best season. Stayed healthy, put up career numbers across the board. Had some monster moments in the postseason as they both did. What we're all talking about, though, in the NBA as a whole is, boy, you got Golden State just miles ahead of everybody else. Cleveland has just continued to dominate the East. And it really brings up the question is, can anybody else really compete? Boston, maybe, you know, they obviously are armed to make a big move, potentially Gordon Hayward or Paul George or something or other. The Wizards don't have that ammo, apparently, seemingly. So they may just be looking at, hey, we need the young guys we have to get better. They've got some young guys who have got room to grow. But in terms of Wall and Beal, with them as the focal points, how high can this team realistically go? Do they actually have to go out and get that third guy, as everybody else does? I mean, can Wall and Beal, is there enough growth potential there with, you know, with looking at the pieces they have, where this team can really compete with Cleveland and I guess maybe Boston, or are we just kind of looking at, hey, look, they improved a ton, they're winning, that's good, but don't start planning a parade any decade soon.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably be more in the latter camp than I was in the former camp. I mean, while, you know, age 26 last season, this year and last year, you know, probably are going to be his couple best years in the NBA, assuming that, you know, there's not like a real big lasting benefit to getting his knees cleaned out and how much healthier he got last season. You know, from an age standpoint and from the importance of quickness to his game standpoint, that's probably about as good as he's going to get. Beal, you know, still has more room for growth, but again, how much better is he going to be than last year? That's tough for me to say. So, you know, I think with those two guys as your best two players, it's probably going to be hard to get past the Eastern Conference Finals.
And that's the tricky part about with the NBA in particular. With the other three main pro sports, it does feel like a team like the Wizards could, realistic or not, could hope and dream of making it all the way. But in the NBA, with this is not a new thing with Golden State and Cleveland. This is sort of how it is as a league for forever. If you don't have one of the five best players in the league or three of the top 15, 20 guys, it's just hard to get over that top. And, you know, LeBron is maybe the ultimate impediment in the East, and it just really is sort of hard to see how the Wizards can make that move. If you don't mind, let me indulge you for one more thing about John Wall. I mentioned earlier his contract situation. You just mentioned potentially last year and this coming year may be the two best years of his career, hypothetically. With his game in particular, I don't say all speed, but so much is predicated on speed. His jump shot, much better than it was when he came into the career, but he's certainly not a knockdown shooter. Is there any point, if we're talking about this max contract extension, is there any part of you that would say, hey, you know what? If you give John Wall 5 years and that speed starts to go by year in that year two or three of that deal, what's he going to be? Maybe the drop off of a player, maybe he can't sustain it the way other guys could because that jumper isn't there. Is there any part of you that would even contemplate that? Or is that just, hey, if he's willing to sign, shut up and give him the paper?
Well, for sure. And I mean, I don't think it even necessarily has to be specific to John Wall. You know, I did a piece not long after the CBA was announced looking at, you know, if we look at the history of guys who would have been eligible for this under the old CBA, how well would those contracts have turned out? And for the most part, the answer was not very well at all. You know, for the top, you know, the guys who are top five in the league, you know, Steph Curry, who's going to be the first player to start seeing this supermax money because of the fact that he can re-sign for it this summer as opposed to getting it on an extension. You know, that's probably going to work out for him because he's so amazing. But for guys like Wall, who, you know, are qualifying by being, you know, somewhere between 10th and 15th best player in the league, they're usually doing that when they're at their peak, and then the next contract is going to be taking them through their decline phase. So in general, I don't think that those contracts are going to end up being very good for guys like John Wall. And it's interesting now that, you know, we've seen a couple of teams pass on that opportunity. First, you know, the Kings with DeMarcus Cousins, that obviously complicated by his attitude, the off the court issues, everything like that. But then also Chicago now with Jimmy Butler, you know, would have had the opportunity probably to extend him as a designated veteran next year and instead decided to trade him now, despite the fact that his value wasn't, as it turned out, very high in the trade market. So it's going to be an interesting balance to see how teams strike. I mean, at the same time, you know, the Wizards, the sort of the same argument we had about Otto Porter applies to a Wall extension. What are you going to do that's going to be better given the fact that you've already got now so much money tied up in theoretically Porter in addition to Beal and Yan Mahinmi, even if you look beyond, you know, 2019 where Gortat is signed, like you're not going to be able to go out and replace John Wall. So, you know, maybe you do have to kind of swallow hard and do that deal. And I believe if they do it this summer, they'd be limited to 4 years on the extension, right? Because you can't have more than a total of 6 years going out ahead.
I think that's right. And if you're saying that, then I'm going to assume it's right. So, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So that might be an incentive for them to try to get a deal done now and, you know, lock Wall in, you know, if he's concerned about whether, you know, he's going to be eligible in the future. And, you know, we know that he's been concerned about the fact that he hasn't been making very much money in the past. Well, that could change in a big way if he does sign that designated veteran extension.
Awesome. Hey, Kevin, man, I really appreciate your time. I know you've got to, you got to run. I have a thousand other questions I've wanted to ask you about the undrafted free agents the Wizards just brought in, where they fit in with teams like Milwaukee and Toronto and yada, yada, yada. But maybe I'll save that for another day. Are you going to be in Vegas for Summer League?
I will be there for a week.
Oh, well, that's way too long to be in Vegas. but, you know, at least you're working. Just stay away from the bad stuff. But cool. Well, I'll be out there for the Wizards, I guess, first three games. So hopefully I have a chance to talk to you in person. And we'll hang out maybe a little bit out there. Really appreciate your time, man. Best of luck with the free agency. I know you're going to be busy as hell. And, again, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, compared to free agency, Vegas does not seem very wild at all. Those first 48 hours pales in comparison to that. So, yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to tick another locked on team off my list.
How many is that?
I was trying to count it up yesterday. I know I've done Blazers, Warriors. I think I did Hawks, locked on fantasy, and then locked on NBA. So I think I'm at a half dozen now.
Yeah, no, I know David Locke uses you a lot, which is wise. So you know, I'm stuck with Todd. He gets you. So I think he's getting a better end of that deal. Cool, man. Appreciate it. Hopefully I'll see you in Vegas, and we'll talk again.
All right, sounds good.
All right, a lot to digest there from Kevin Pelton, but I thought that was a really interesting conversation. He's somebody who really studies this, not just the Wizards, but the league as a whole, has a good feel for the salary cap, player value. I was really intrigued by what he thought about the Gortat situation, because to me, I've said this before on other podcasts, what the Wizards can get out of that if they choose to make a trade, and maybe they don't. I've said all along, I'm not advocating trading Gortat. I'm simply looking at the situation, as we just discussed, where you have these two big men in a small ball era that are making a lot of money. They can't play together. The Wizards have this, you know, obviously they have issues on the bench at the moment that we're talking. Could you flip Gortat in some capacity to help replenish that bench, get some other pieces, what have you? But based on Kevin's take, that he doesn't know if there's much value for Gortat, it may make sense for the Wizards to just stay pat. As I mentioned during that conversation, and it's something that I wrote for NBC Washington right after the season, the Wizards, in that stretch where Mahimi was playing, the bench unit was much better. And again, that was with some other upgrades as well. But I view it as his presence defensively and on the boards there for that second unit. Sure, he's not a great offensive threat, but he does a lot of good things on the other end of the court that can cover up for some of your other ills. Tim Frazier, not necessarily a great offensive, a great defensive option. Also not a great shooter, which makes the pairing with Mahimi a little bit dicey. All that said, it'll be very curious to see what happens with Gortat to me in particular. I'd be stunned if Otto Porter didn't come back. I'd be surprised if Bogdanovich stays. Therefore, the bigger question for me is what happens with Gortat? And obviously some free agent or two will show up here. It's just a matter of who. We're just assuming that. The Gortat thing to me is the bigger mystery. Again, I keep saying Gortat. It could be Mahimi, could be neither. But that's kind of where I'm sort of pondering the Wizards. All right, so I mentioned at the top, wanted to touch a little bit on the Summer League team. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast or not. My plan is to be out there in Las Vegas for the first three Wizards games. That's the plan, he says with air quotes. But I think that's going to work out. Excited for that. Always a good time to go to Summer League. Hopefully we'll be able to do a bunch of podcasts and interviews and other recon while out there. As I mentioned at the top, Daniel House, part of the Summer League team a year ago and also on the NBA roster for a bit, he will be there. Jared Cunningham, he will be there as well. Played about 80-something games in the NBA. Was in China last year. I wrote about both of those guys and sort of the Summer League as a whole. You can find that on FanRag Sports if you go to their Wizards page, or if you go to the Locked On Wizards Twitter feed, you can find the link in my timeline as well, but I have a lot of other stuff in there. Don't go there today, at least. Go to the Locked On Wizards one. So the Wizards lineup, I think, is becoming the Wizards roster is becoming interesting. And just to be clear, this is a technicality to some degree, but the Wizards will be doing their training camp out in Las Vegas. They're not going to do it here. However many players they will bring, they will likely bring more than they need, and some guys will get cut. So you never know. So when we say that any of these players will be there, not forget Sheldon McClellan, Daniel Eshefu, Chris McCullough, their own guys, they'll be there. But almost anybody else hypothetically could get cut. I would think, though, most of the guys we've been talking about are probably pretty good to show up. There's like Devin Robinson from Florida State, Michael Young from Pittsburgh, guys who were undrafted but interesting prospects, Chris Jenkins from Villanova, Isaac Humphries, Kentucky, Marcus Keene, the nation's leading scorer. Anything's possible. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe somehow they beg off, they think they get a better offer, somebody signs them to a guaranteed or gives them some money up front the way the Wizards did last year with Oshefu and Mac, or the Wizards have a change of heart, who knows. But this is a preliminary, but presumably we're just going to go ahead and talk about it as if these guys will be in Las Vegas for the Summer League. Since this podcast is getting a bit long, I'll just sort of end it there, but I'll talk more about this on a subsequent podcast. But in any event, I think it's a pretty interesting group, the way it was sort of described to me, that the Wizards are putting together sort of a balance of some veterans who are, you know, like a guy like a Jared Cunningham looking to get back into the league, Kevin Pangos, former Gonzaga point guard, will be on the team, and then you have the kids coming in. Can the Wizards find that talent, even from guys who weren't drafted? Obviously, a year ago they had three guys make the team who were undrafted. We'll see if something similar happens this time. They don't have a ton of spots open, but again, free agency and if there's any trades made, that could change a lot. So let's end it there. Thank you again to you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed that Kevin Pelton podcast. Send me some feedback. Would love to hear from you on Locked On Wizards on Twitter at Ben Standig. Or hey, if you're in iTunes, leave comments. Give us a 5-star rating especially if you think it's worthy. And even if you don't, just come on, click a button. What the heck? All right, we'll end it there. Thanks, as always, for your time. Until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Home drive, off balance shot. Dagger! Not ball.